Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 20th of July, 2013. I'll be taking you for the next hour as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. Busy program on this blazing hot Saturday. Hopefully, especially on the East Coast, we'll be getting some relief soon from all this heat, but it's supposed to be another hot one today. So just stay cool out there, stay cool and stay inside for that matter. British Open going on as we speak. Lee Westwood has just bogeyed the eighth hole, so he's three under through eight. Tiger Woods is of course in the mix. Tiger Woods is in the mix at one under. You have Angel Cabrera at one under. You have a guy, Rafael Cabrera Bello, at one under. And a bunch of other guys who are even par, including Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson, guys like that. So it's going. You have a wide open field for this British Open. I don't believe any of these guys will finish when this round is over. Will be over under par. To be honest with you, the way the course is playing. Westwood got hot, was up to four under a hole ago after the seventh hole. But the back nine is going to be rough. And it's, you know, listen, the last 2 days have shown that the course has gotten more difficult as the day has moved on. So with that being said, I think you will see probably, you know, the leader at even or even the over par for that matter. The guys who are in pretty good shape, to be honest with you, are two guys in particular, Brent Snedeker and Sergio Garcia, who are both three over, but are both right now in the clubhouse at three over. Those are guys who I think frankly are in good shape to be in a position to possibly win this tournament tomorrow, because they got their round over with earlier, of course. You know, on Saturday, all the leaders, for the most part, everybody plays their round at the same time. Basically, probably a three-hour gap between the guy who tees off first versus the guy who the leaders versus the guys who are at the bottom half of the leaderboard. In comparisons to Thursday and Friday, when you had, you know, basically a day and night session, or a morning and day and day session, where you had a split, and it really favored the guys who were teeing off in the morning. To be honest with you, because those scores are much lower. But again, you have a bunch of guys who are in the mix here to win this tournament. Lee Westwood seeking his first major tournament. Westwood has been, you know, the bridesmaid a number of times in these majors. He's finished top three in these majors. He's finished top three in every single major at least three times, which is, you know, he's been in a top three in every single major. He's finished in the top three every major. He has then gone 61 majors without a win, which is the most out of any active player, 40 years old. If he's going to win it, now would be the time. With a field that with a two-stroke lead through eight holes, he's through eight holes right now. He just drove a shot into the bunker, so we'll see if he can. We'll see how he can finish. Again, I thought Tiger was playing well. Tiger was playing well at the beginning of this round, but the last two or three holes, his putter has let him down a bit, and he seems to be struggling seems to be struggling with some confidence, to be honest with you. So we'll see if Tiger can regroup. Again, you just want to be around even or over or plus one. You know, you want to pars are like birdies. You know, this course is playing so tough that it is like a U.S. Open. Pars are like birdies for this particular tournament. As Mickelson misses a long par attempt to go one over. If you have one over, two over, three over, that's not a bad place to be. If you're between even and say three or even four over, to be honest with you, that's not the worst place to be. I would be shocked if anybody finishes over par. I think the leader will be at even, if not one or two over, to be honest with you. I think this course is playing that tough. This course is playing that tough. So far, we haven't had anybody complain about the course, which, thank goodness, because I was getting tired of players, whether it be Ian Poulter, Phil Mickelson, bitching and moaning about how tough the course is and about the pin placements, especially the pin placements. It's a major tournament, okay? It's the reason why they call it a major and the reason why there's only four of them. You know, it's about the best of the best. You have to overcome the elements. You have to overcome bunkers. You have to overcome the rough. You have to overcome fast greens. You have to overcome the wind, the heat, whatever the hell it is. It's a major. You know, is it easy to win a championship? No. You have to overcome injuries and arguments in the locker room. So, I mean, this idea that everything is going to be laid out for these players. I mean, give me a break. And then Mickelson tried to backtrack, saying, well, you know, maybe I overreacted a little bit with my comments. They've done a fabulous job at the layout of the course. And like, come on, Phil, just if you're going to complain, just complain. Don't try to go in between. As Phil bogeys his hole to go one under. He does make the bogey, which, again, a bogey is not bad either, to be honest with you, at certain spots, to go one over, excuse me. So we've seen a guy have a nine at a particular hole earlier today. So a bogey is not the worst thing either. If you can avoid, you just want to avoid those disasters, you want to avoid the fives, the sixes, the sevens, those things that can completely take you out of the tournament. A par is good, a bogey is not bad. Birdies are few and far between. Other than Lee Westwood, nobody's been making birdies of late, to be honest with you. But again, a wide open British Open tournament You know, nobody knows who's going to win this tournament. This leaderboard can change, you know, within a hole. I mean, it could change with one shot. Certainly exciting for golf. And again, if you're golf, you want Mickelson and Woods in the mix. Right now, Tiger Woods is one under. Phil Mickelson is one over. They're well within striking distance. A dream for television and for the golf world is to have both Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. One of you, I mean, you can actually get away with one of them being there, in particular Tiger Woods. But if you can have both of them in the mix come Sunday, that would be certainly great for the sport. And along with the storylines of Lee Westwood as well, I think the perfect scenario is to have Woods, Mickelson in the mix and have Westwood chasing that elusive first major. That, to me, that is your ideal storyline. Ideal storyline for this tournament. Also, keep in mind you have Angel Cabrera, who's won two majors. He's one under. So Zach Johnson's even. You have Adam Scott in the mix. You know, you have a lot of big names who are right there. Dustin Johnson's two over. He's, you know, considered one of the most gifted players to not win a major, so he's out there as well. Darren Clark, who won this tournament a couple of years back, is two over. So there are a bunch of guys who have a legit chance. You can make a case. There are about 20 to 25 guys that can still win this tournament, at least. So again, this is a wide open tournament. And this is, I mean, this is golf, you know, this is golf in two, this is major championship golf in 2013. Nobody, the days of a guy running away with a tournament, those days are done. I mean, Rory McIlroy, I know he did it a couple of years ago at Congressional, at the U.S. Open, or back in 2012 at the U.S. Open. That you know, that's going to be a once in every 10 to 15 year type thing. You're not going to see that major tournament golf. Guys running away from the tournament, you're going to see it come down to the wire. You're going to see playoffs like you saw this year at the Masters with Angel Cabrera and Adam Scott. So you're going to see it come right down, for the most part, come right down to the wire. You know, Phil Mickelson this year and Justin Rose. So that's the kind of golf that you're going to see from here on out, I feel, in majors, because the talent gap is so close with all these players. There's no one, Tiger Woods is ranked number one, but there's no one guy who stands out right now playing golf, to be honest with you. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk some baseball, but we'll be back with today's headlines. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Headlines for the day, Dustin Pedroia is expected, and Boston Red Sox are working on a 6-year extension that could be worth $100 million. Pedroia, of course, has won the MVP, having a very good year. Was an all-star this year, having a nice bounce-back year coming off, and so is the rest of the Red Sox team, for that matter, coming off suspect year. Again, Pedroia is a type of guy, he's a winner, without question. He's the type of guy who, you know, is a very good player, has won an MVP, not a Hall of Fame caliber player, but I'm not sure if I'm giving Dustin Pedroia 6 years at the age of 29 years old. He's a guy who, first of all, his numbers at Fenway versus his road numbers the differences are stark. He's an average player away from Fenway Park. Fenway Park, he's been Superman, tailor-made for that ballpark, which is tailor-made, you know, for the kind of hitter, that right hand for the kind of hitter that he is. But, 29 years old, I'm just not sure that I'm giving him that kind of money. Not so much the money, but just the years. Not even about the money, it's the years. But the Red Sox, again, he's a Red Sox in every sense of the word. Being a Red Sox, he's with them for that championship back in 2007, played a big role in that, when they're on that Euclid, Manny Ramirez, that team. So, you know, I can understand it, but again, I think that, and he's a great clubhouse guy. Everybody likes him, well respected. But again, we've seen these players, you know, Albert Pujols, Josh Hamilton, we've seen these players decline into their 30s. Pedroia's not even on that level. And so, his decline is going to be even worse going to his 30s. But again, I'm not sure. I'm giving him $100 million. I'm giving him a 6-year extension. 4 years would be one thing, but 6 years is a long time, especially at the age of 29. The Washington Redskins won a lawsuit stemming from the bounding gate to be dropped. Former player Barrett Green is suing the Washington Redskins along with Greg Williams because Green's career was ended back in 2004 on a hit by former Redskin tight end Robert Royo in a 2004 Giant Redskin game. Of course, when you think that you can't hear any more about this bounding gate thing, it just pops up. The Redskins want the lawsuit dropped. If you're Barry Green, Barry Green is a top big name by any stretch of imagination. You end your career on a hit. And I know it's 9 years later. But listen, where is his money coming from? You're not a big name. I don't know how many years Barry Green played in the NFL. So is he eligible for pension, things of that nature, health benefits? I can fully understand why Barry Green is suing and why he would want to get paid. This is not a situation where a guy is just trying to get rich off a situation, off what the NFL is doing. Just trying to get rich. This is a guy who is fighting for his livelihood, to be honest with you. If it were a big name, a guy who made millions and millions of dollars in endorsements, things of that nature, I'd be screaming, I'd be looking at it with a cynical view. But this guy, again, I had not heard of Barrett Green before this article, to be honest with you. Had not heard of him. Do the Redskins going to pay up? I mean, the Redskins are going to have to pay up. I mean, Greg Williams was cited for that. Was a part of that, the bounding gate. I don't blame Robert Royal. He was just doing what he was told. So I don't blame any of the players in the bounding gate. They were just being good soldiers, doing what they're told. But the Redskins are probably going to pay up. They're going to have a hearing September 24th. This thing could go on and on and on. Can go on and on and on. Who knows how long before this settle, as Mickelson just bogeyed a hole to go 2-over, I believe. Mickelson is now 2-over through 16 holes. So again, if you're Mickelson, you just want to finish. You don't want any more bogeys. If you're Mickelson, you want to stay at 2-over, possibly pick up a shot. Again, 1-over, 2-over, you should be in good shape heading into tomorrow, but Redskins going to have to pay up. I mean, again, the guy's career, this is a guy's career was taken away from him. off a coach that was, you know, again, you all you have to do is go to video. So it's not going to be that hard to get video and see how you aim blow. Again, it's not an open and shut case. You know, guys get their knees taken out all the time. But considering what went on during that particular time with Bounty Gate, what they showed in the Brett Favre video when Greg Williams was with New Orleans, what happened with, you know, Sean Payton gets suspended, Greg Williams gets suspended, New Orleans general manager gets suspended. More than likely, the Redskins are probably will be smart. They just settle out of court and not let this thing go too far. But we'll see what happens with that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Again, a busy program, a lot to do. We're going to begin our countdown to NFL 2013 with a preview of the AFC East. We'll also talk some Johnny Football as well. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the Serial Corner Review. We'll be right back. Here's your call number. A couple of key series in baseball last night. You had Boston taking out the Yankees. Boston continues to play well, especially with the pitching. Baltimore with Texas. The Dodgers edge out Washington. Some good battles between Yasiel Puig and Steven Strasburg. Cincinnati taking out Pittsburgh. So baseball second half finally kicks off, and I would say finally. I don't understand, you know, it's one thing to have a travel day off following the All-Star break, and baseball has always done it that way in terms of the Wednesday, having that Wednesday off. Do they need Thursday off as well? I don't get that part of it, you know, to be honest with you. The All-Star break, you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. To me, 3 days is more than enough time off. You didn't need the whole – I mean, basically getting the whole week off. So baseball getting second half beginning last night. Again, a bunch of key series to start off the second half. Apparently, the Matt Garza to Texas Ranger trade fell through earlier this week. So that's not going to happen, at least for now. You know, I mean, it's not the trade deadline. It's still the trade deadline, I believe, is not for another week or so. I believe trade deadline is the 29th of July. So you still have some time for that trade to possibly happen. Of course, Texas, you can never have enough starting pitching. Would I trust Garza has pitched in the American League, I'm not sure, and has pitched in the pennant race, so he's going to be the hot commodity. A lot of people are going to be after some Cub prospects. Who knows, Soriano could be up as well. They got some bullpen people. So that, you know, it could be a number of trades happening. There's a number of trades happening in the next couple of days. Not a lot out there in terms of position players. And we discussed this with Mark Manusis earlier last week. The majority of trades I think you're going to see are bullpen guys. And I'm waiting. You're waiting. Everybody's, of course, waiting to see what Detroit does possibly with trying to get a closer. And who knows, whether it's Axford, K-Rod, Papelbon, there are a number of guys out there. There are a ton of bullpen people out there that could be on the move. Detroit certainly needs to shore up that aspect. And also, there has been some talk that Lincecum could be on the move and not as a starter, but as a guy, as a bullpen guy. I don't know if you want to do that. I know he had some success for it in the postseason, but over the course of a long stretch of a regular season, I don't know how that would work out. And I frankly don't think the Giants are going to get rid of Lincecum, considering that they are not out of the race. They won last night, shutting out Arizona, and they're still, you know, 5.5 games out in division where nobody's running away. So I don't think the Giants are going to be sellers. I don't think the Giants are going to be buyers like they normally are, but I definitely don't think they're going to be sellers in this particular trade market. But again, good win for Baltimore last night in Texas. Texas has handled Baltimore for the most part, over the last 2 or 3 years. But Baltimore is able to hold Texas to just one run last night in Texas. We'll see how that series can go. Great race again in the AL East. In the AL East, where you have, you know, Boston, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, and the Yankees. But the Yankees, to a lesser extent, I think the Yankees are hanging on by a string to be in the race. Boston could put a serious dent in the Yankees this weekend, depending on how the rest of that series goes. In Fenway, it's the first Yankees' first trip to Fenway. They could be 9 out by the time that series is over if Boston were to sweep. So we'll see how that goes. But it's definitely a great three-way race with Baltimore, Boston, and also Tampa Bay. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll have another segment of Are You Kidding Me coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Woods and Westwood remain tied for the lead at 2-under through 10 holes. Woods just parred the 10th hole, so did Westwood. So they are both at 2-under through 10 holes. One shot ahead, both Rafael Cabrera Bello and Hunter Mahan, who are both 1-under. Still, you have a bunch of people: Adam Scott, Aniel Cabrera, Miguel Jimenez, who at one time had the lead coming into this round. It is now even par. Zach Johnson is 1-over. Ryan Moore, 1-over. Again, if you can be somewhere around even or a little bit or two or three over par, you should be in good shape going into tomorrow. These conditions, again, I don't think the conditions have been bad, but the way the course is playing, it's playing difficult. So far, I have not heard any complaints from anybody talking about the course and the pin placements and things of that nature, which is always good to hear because, you know, again, it is a major tournament and it's supposed to be hard. I never understood the complaints.
Are you kidding me?
Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, kicked out of the Manning camp. Or depending on who you wanted to, depending on who you believe was, you know, respectfully told to go home, or respect, it was a mutual decision between the Mannings and Manziel, in terms of him being sent home. Here's the thing. So Manziel, allegedly, everything is allegedly with this situation. Manziel allegedly oversleeps, okay, because he allegedly was not intoxicated. He allegedly, you know, his phone, cell phone died. Now, he's a camp counselor, along with a couple of other college standouts, camp counselor at the Manning Passing Academy. His roommate's A.J. McCarron. A.J. McCarron, who, by the way, is his conference rival, only team that beat Alabama last year, Texas A&M. Allegedly, A.J. McCarron unsuccessfully tried to wake Manziel before he left and went to a meeting. So Manziel oversleeps, misses a meeting. It is determined between he and the Mannings that, you know, his best interest would be for him to go home. And then everybody, of course, wants to say, whether it's the Mannings or Manziel, everybody wants to, you know, tell us this is, you know, it's no big deal. He's welcome back next year. You know, Manziel, I overslept, missed a meeting. I was not intoxicated. There were social activities going on, so on and so on and so on. First of all, I personally think he was drunk and think he did oversleep. Okay. Which is, you know what? I'm not going to go crazy. He's 20 years old. Think back to when you were 20 years old. Did you ever drink and oversleep something, oversleep a class or something of that nature? Yeah, of course you did. But, you know, unless you're a Mormon, I mean, let's be honest, he's 20 years old. But that's not even the bigger picture to me for this situation. Number one, if you're the Mannings, don't try to act like you're not upset about this. You know, why are you trying to protect Johnny Manziel? You're the Mannings. You are Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Archie Manning. You are football royalty. You know, I want them to go out there and bury Johnny Manziel and say, hey, his behavior wasn't unacceptable, so, you know, he wasn't welcome back to the camp. Because if this thing was a big deal to the Mannings, because if it's not a big deal, then why'd you ask him to go home? If it was just that simple, his alarm clock broke, watch died, whatever, missed one meeting. Is that a reason, him missing a meeting and oversleeping, is that a reason to send him home if you think that highly of him? Is that a reason to send him home? If you're portraying to the rest of the world that this is not that big of a deal. Now, if you came out there and said, hey, you know, we don't want him back for this year. He needs to grow up. This is unacceptable. I can say, okay, that makes sense. Whether I agree with the decision or not. But yeah, again, everybody's trying to stand in the middle and not really take a position. Everybody's trying, you know, it's either you're pissed off with him or you're not. And again, there's no reason for the Mannings to kiss Johnny Manziel's ass. I mean, you don't need Johnny Manziel. Are you looking for extra publicity? That's the only reason. I mean, you know, he's a very good player. We all know this. But yeah, do you need Johnny Manziel to sell tickets? I'm sure that Manning Passing Academy was sold out. It's Peyton Manning. It's the Mannings. You're a football royalty in all walks, in college, in pros, high school, whatever. Everybody knows the name Manning. So that's the part of the situation I didn't get. You know, as far as Johnny Manziel goes, yes, he's been trying to live the life of a celebrity ever since he's won the Heisman, had the great bowl game. That's fine. You know, you could do that. come game time, come September, especially September 14th when they play Alabama, just make sure you're on your A game. All you have to do is produce on the field. You produce on the field, all this stuff is fine. If you don't, and you take a step back, then you're gonna get destroyed. You're gonna get destroyed. I think frankly, he is doing too much, considering that. You're supposed to get ready for a season, considering that, it's another year where teams, defensive coordinators, specifically the SEC, is going to have a year of film on you. And I'm not saying he's not preparing, he's not working out. I'm sure he's working out. I'm sure he's doing his regular diligence. But you can't tell me that his 100% focus is on football right now. You can't tell me that. Please don't try to sell that to me, because it can't be. He's at the finals. He's at this party, he's at that party, he's at a passing academy. Well, he's not at a passing academy, he got kicked out. So I can't believe that all of a sudden that he's 100% zeroed in on football. I don't believe it. But again, if he goes out there and performs, then you know what? We all just shut up basically and let him live his life. And the third thing is, he is again 20 years old. He's 20 years old. Get that this guy was a freshman last year. He's a freshman. God give him a little leeway to grow up. God give him a little leeway. But he's done again. Does some stupid stuff. DUI. But 20-year-olds do stupid things all the time. 30, 40, 50-year-olds do stupid things. So as long as he performs, I think all this stuff is going to be kind of forgotten. But he's putting himself in a position to where if he doesn't perform, he's going to get destroyed. And you know what? This rules of the game. The higher the climb, the bigger the fall. So we'll see what Manziel looks like over the course of the season. Victor Cruz complaining about his recent contract signing with the New York Giants.
Are you kidding me?
6 years, $45 million for a guy who has had two good years. Victor Cruz has had two good years, okay? You're not Randy Moss in his prime. You're not Chris Carter. You're a very good player. You're not a dominant player. Okay, pipe down. You signed the deal. I don't want to hear from Victor. I don't want to hear from Victor Cruz, to be honest with you. I don't want to hear from Victor Cruz being about complaining about a contract that you signed. You signed the deal. If you didn't like the deal, then why'd you sign it? He's complaining about, could have got more money on the open market. And you know what? Then don't sign a deal and wait till you outright can become a free agent. Wait until the Giants don't care franchise tag you. Just wait until that point. But of course, it'd be stupid from a business standpoint because you can get injured tomorrow. So I don't want to hear from business. I don't want to hear from Victor Cruz. You're making top flight money for a receiver. You're not Calvin Johnson, so you're not going to get Calvin Johnson money. You're not Larry Fitzgerald, so you're not getting Larry Fitzgerald money. It's just that simple. You want to complain about Mike Wallace's contract? Okay, that's fine. Mike Wallace, hey, he got that deal. It was a team dumb enough to give him that kind of money. They need a receiver. Pittsburgh didn't want to play him. Different situation. It is what it is. Victor Cruz is complaining to the Giants. He's complaining about the system. You got paid. It's not like you're playing for peanuts here. And remember where you came from. You were, no, 2 years ago, nobody even knew the hell who Victor Cruz was. 2 years ago, 2011. Nobody knew. Coming into the 2011 season, before the Giants had all those injuries to their receivers, nobody knew who Victor Cruz was. Now that you're the Salsa King, you signed with Jay-Z, be happy and shut up. I don't want to hear from you. Cam Newton commenting on being a Falcon fan, not only growing up, but as we speak.
Are you kidding me?
Coming off a season that Cam Newton had where his team was awful, where even though he played well at the end of the season, at the end of the season, still, you know, compared to his rookie season, kind of regressed a bit. And I'm not saying he took a big regression, but still, he didn't have a very good season. His numbers that he put up did not impact the game. Did not equal out to wins. Coming off a season where, again, where your team was as bad as he was, bad as they were, I would just kind of pipe down off the dumb comments. And, you know, it's funny, and this is why the NFL players have way too much time on their hands. I got a quarterback who gets caught, who's wearing a Miami Dolphins hat, and then puts it on Twitter as to say, how dare you criticize me for wearing a Miami Dolphins hat, even though I play for the San Francisco 49ers. Now I got a quarterback who says that not only the Atlanta Falcons were his team growing up, which is fine as a kid before you got in the NFL, right now as we speak, they're still his favorite team. And I'm like, you play for the Carolina Panthers. This is your divisional rival. You know, if you said, you know, I root for the Atlanta Falcons when they don't play us, I could accept that a little bit because they were my hometown team. I could accept that. But how about just saying that they were your hometown team growing up, that they were your team growing up? I just don't get, you know, you just don't get what these guys are thinking when they comment. Again, how do you sell that to your fan base? If you're somebody within that Carolina Panthers organization, you have your own players talking about a divisional rival, basically kissing a divisional rival's ass, basically. Yeah, I love the Falcons. I love them, but I'm playing for Carolina. Doesn't make sense. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will preview the AFC East. That's coming up on this last edition of the Cynical Review. We'll be right back. After the 12 o'clock hour in this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, Westwood and Woods remain tied at 2-under through 11 holes. Arnel Cabrera now is 1-under. Hunter Mahan is 1-under. Mahan is also in that group of players who have never won a major. Barry Quinn, highly successful, or very successful. So he's in that mix as well. Not quite on a level of, say, Lee Westwood. He hasn't been that successful, but still, Hunter Mahan has been a very good player. So keep an eye out for him. Zach Johnson is still 1-under. Now is 1-over. Is 1-over as well. So, again, a good place to be right now. Again, like I said, Brant Snedeker and Sergio Garcia, who are both at 3-over, they are, to me, are in excellent shape. And definitely, I'm not saying they're going to win the tournament, but they will definitely be in a position to contend for the tournament tomorrow. Right now, 5 shots out, and you still have at least 6 or 7 holes left where Woods and Westwood could drop some shots, could lose some scores, can dip. So we'll see how that turns out. Angel Cabrera again, 1-under. a guy who you always, when he's in the mix and he's majors, you always have to be keep an eye out for. He's unflappable. Not that often that he's in the mix, but when he is in the mix, he normally he wins the tournament or comes close to winning a major. Almost won the Masters, if not for just fabulous shot making from Adam Scott, and already has a Masters and has a U.S. Open under his belt. A guy who again just is not a lifer as far as golfer. A guy who we know, Angel Cabrera, has top 10 talent, but you know. Ranked, I believe, ranked like number 44 in the world, or 50 in the world, but you know, is a Argentine, is a hero back in his own country. We're gonna preview the AFC East now as we begin our countdown to kickoff. Of course, Baltimore will travel to Denver, take on the Broncos. First game of the season. Team to beat in AFC East. By default, I circled default. New England Patriots, they still have by far and away the best player in the division in terms of Tom Brady. New England has a lot of question marks. You know, you already know about the Aaron Hernandez situation, but keep in mind they also lost Wes Welker, Brandon Lloyd, Dante Stallworth. They, you know, Gronkowski, who knows when he's going to come back, who knows how effective he's going to be when he does come back. The defense is still suspect. They add an aging Adrian Wilson, and they add Tommy Kelly, who 5 years ago was a great signing, but who now is on who can't stay on the field on one, and clearly is on a decline in terms of his career. This year, the schedule – it's not, again, the Patriots catch these breaks with the schedule. It's not easy, but it's not a first place schedule as far as I'm concerned. They do have a couple of tough stretches where they'll go at Atlanta, at Cincinnati, and home to New Orleans. And they have another stretch where they go at Carolina, home to Denver, and at Houston. Those are the two toughest stretches. They're in a horrible division as far as I'm concerned. A division that probably, when you look at the quarterbacks, probably the worst set of quarterbacks of any division in football. I think Tom Brady and Belichick will be enough to get them to 9-7 and 9-7 in another division title. But again, if any of these other teams had a quarterback that was even decent, that was even, you know, a top 15, top 20 quarterback, I would say that they will overtake the Patriots this year. But I just don't see that. I don't see that quarterback in this division. So I'm still have to go with the Patriots to win this division. By default, with a 9-7 record. Next in line, the Miami Dolphins. Added Mike Wallace, added Brent Grimes, Tyson Klebo, Darnell Ellerby. So they made some nice moves. They of course lost Reggie Bush, and Jake Long. It all comes down to Ryan Tannehill. I thought Tannehill, for the most part, had a nice rookie season. He was overshadowed by, of course, Wilson, Griffin, and also Andrew Luck, and Kaepernick to a lesser extent, even though he wasn't a rookie, but basically was his first year getting significant playing time. But I thought Tannehill played relatively well, considering he actually had no weapons receiving-wise. I mean, Devon Best is one of your number one weapons. That's not a lot to go to. I like Miami has some nice pieces on defense, but they do have a tough schedule. They have a couple of tough stretches where they go at Cleveland, at Indianapolis, Atlanta, at New Orleans, then Baltimore. Then they have another stretch where they're Buffalo, at New England, Cincinnati, at Tampa, San Diego. So they, you know, those couple of stretches probably are going to determine what the rest of the season goes into. Again, I don't know what to expect completely out of Ryan Tannehill. Second year, we'll see, you know, we'll see what he's made of. What he's made of in his second year. I think Miami is a 7-9 team. Probably, you know, maybe the upside, maybe they can get to 500 if things break right. Have a tough schedule. I mean, you're talking about having to play non-divisional games, you know, Cincinnati, San Diego, Cincinnati, San Diego, New Orleans, Atlanta, Indianapolis, those Baltimore, those are tough non-divisional games. Good news for them is they're in a brutal division, but they still have to play New England twice. So I think Miami will be what Miami basically was last year. I mean, they'll be in that 7-9 range. I think they'll top out at 8-8 if everything breaks right. The wild card team in this division, and I don't mean by wild card in terms of making the playoffs, but I mean wild card in terms of it can go in either direction. It can finish in last place or possibly even first place, is the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo, you know, has a nice set of skilled players. CJ Spiller is, when healthy, is a top five running back. You still have Stevie Johnson. You drafted Robert Woods. Still have some questions on defense as far as being able to stop the run. Last year, they were horrible. They're changing up schemes. Mario Williams got nothing out of him last year. So we'll see in year number two if he can live up, even come close to living up to that contract. He probably won't be able to live up to that contract, but even come close to the player that he was when healthy in Houston. They have a tough stretch where they start off, and this is going to determine their season. New England, Carolina at home, at the Jets, home to Baltimore, at Cleveland, Cincinnati. If they can make it past, if they can survive that stretch, they should have a decent season. I just don't like the quarterback situation. You're putting your hands into a rookie, you know, who you drafted in the first round, who everybody thought was a third or fourth round pick, in E.J. Manuel. And if he doesn't work out this first year, which chances are he won't, he's a rookie, you have Kevin Cobb to back him up. I mean, so basically Buffalo doesn't have a quarterback. So you don't have a quarterback. You have a defense that struggled against the run, which can only get better. And last year they gave up like 145 yards. You wanted to see them in terms of fantasy football. You wanted to see the Buffalo Bills if you had a running back, because they were horrible last year against the run. Again, they have some nice pieces. Again, nice pieces in their secondary with their special teams. They're very good running game. They can score some points. But again, that quarterback situation is just too scary. It's too dicey for me to have any confidence in them cracking that top two in the division. So I have them in third place. Maybe if everything goes right, they can get to 7-9. Right now, I have them at 6-10. That's why I think they are around 6-10. Maybe they can get to 7-9. Maybe. Jets are clearly the worst team in this division from a talent standpoint. You know, you talk about not having a quarterback. I mean, Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez, that's going to be a circus all year long. It's just a matter of question when Geno gets his shot. Marty Morningwake's offensive coordinator, never been a fan of his. They still have a pretty good offensive line. They added Willie Colon. They still have Manigault and Ferguson. Ferguson on that offense, Rickshaw Ferguson on that line. So still a pretty good line. They don't have a running game. I mean, here's the Jets set of running backs: Chris Ivory, Mike Goodson, Joe McKnight, and Bilal Powell. I mean, that doesn't exactly scare anybody. You have Santonio Holmes coming back off an injury. You have some Jeremy Curley. The Jets just don't have. I mean, defensively they're okay at best. The Jets. This is going to be a transitional rebuilding year for the Jets. Clearly. This is how they start off the year: Tampa Bay at New England, Buffalo at Tennessee, at Atlanta, Pittsburgh, New England, at Cincinnati, New Orleans, and then their bye week. I mean, that is New England before their bye week. So at least they get New England out of the way before their bye week, but their bye week is until week 10 of the season. There's going to be a long year for the Jets, to say the least. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the conference. In a tough AFC, even though the division's bad, they're the team that everybody's going to be looking to point to play if you're in that division. 4-12, 3-13. I have them at 4-12. They could easily be 2-14 to 3-13. Jets are frankly just one of the worst teams in football as far as I'm concerned. Their organization, there's no Rex Ryan's your coach. You got Woody Johnson's your owner. There's no stability within that organization. They don't have a clue what they're doing. They did draft D. Milner, who, you know, is injured right now, but is supposed to be a decent replacement for Darrelle Revis, even though you cannot replace the best cornerback, the best defensive player in football when healthy. So we'll see how that goes with that. But they did draft a great player out of Alabama. And again, they have some decent players on defense. They still have Cromartie, still have David Harris. So they have some okay players on defense. But again, that defense couldn't stop anybody in a big spot last year. It didn't. It still doesn't have a pass rush. So eventually, the offense will be so bad that their defense will crack. So I have New England winning the division. New England, Miami, Buffalo, then the Jets. This division absolutely will get no more than one playoff team, period. There's no way, shape, or form that this division gets multiple teams coming out, making the playoffs. You'll have only the division winner will make the playoffs. When we return, we'll talk more about the British Open. That's coming up on this last edition of the Silicon Review. We'll be right back. Latest edition of the Silicon Review, 56 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. You still have Woods and Westwood in a deadlock, two under. Al Cabrera's at one under, Hunter Mahan's at one under as well. A couple people, Ryan Moore, Hendrick Stenson, Miguel Jimenez are at even right now. Again, birdies are going to be not impossible, but birdies are going to be hard to come by during this tournament on this course right now. If you're a golfer, if you're in this tournament, you are in U.S. Open mode. You're just looking to get to make par and not to have that one disastrous hole or shot that takes you out of the tournament. If you can just stay the course, par, you'll be in good shape. Especially if you're within four or five shots, or six shots for that matter. Westwood pars the 12th hole, so he's two. He stays remains two under through 13 holes. As he and Woods are tied for the lead. Again, it seems like you're going to have a leaderboard of, let me check where Mickelson's at right now. As Mickelson should be done his round. Mickelson did a good job to keep himself in the tournament. Mickelson's two over. He shot 72, one over, but he's in good shape. So Mickelson will be right in the mix. He's four shots back, so he's going to be right in the mix for tomorrow. You're going to have, again, 20 to 25 guys in the mix to win this tournament. So it should be a wild final round. A lot can still happen, at the end of this round, because there's still some live golf to be played between Woods, Westwood and Hunter Mahan. But again, tomorrow is going to be that leaderboard is going to be could change a lot tomorrow. There are only four players right now under par in the whole tournament. You have Woods, Westwood, Mahan, and Cabrera, the only guys who are under par right now. You have Woods and Westwood through 13. So they're approaching some of these tough holes, 14, 15. Again, you're Mickelson, you are Brent Snedeker, you are a Jose, you are a Sergio Garcia. You have to be feeling good. You're a Dustin Johnson. Those type of players, you have to be feeling good in terms of where you're at right now. You're right in the mix. You're in the clubhouse. You're in the clubhouse, and you. I mean, again, this tournament is there for the taking. This tournament is wide open. Nobody's going to run away with this tournament, not by a long shot. So, so those guys should be feeling good as they try to win their first Claret Jug. Especially Garcia and Mickelson. Garcia, I mean, how about Sergio Garcia? Garcia, of course, 5 years ago, back in 2008, had a shot against Patrick and lost to Patrick Harrington. Had a shot to win this tournament, lost in playoff to Harrington. And it's kind of been a forgotten guy in terms of best players to not win a major. You know, he's made a ton of money over in Europe playing golf tournaments like that. We know how talented he is. But a lot of you have forgotten him as possibly winning another major. This could be his time. Mickelson, you know, does not play well at the British Open. Has had all those runners up at the U.S. Open. Maybe, you know, he breaks through. Who knows? But we do know this right now. Tiger Woods and Lee Westwood are 2 under and in the tie for the lead. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Coleman Review. Remember, we will return next Saturday and continue our countdown to kickoff. We will preview the AFC North next week, talk about that division, and also some college football as well. So I will see you next week. Have a great weekend.